Joe Donnelly at the White House for dinner with the president. Indy makes an Amazon bid. That, plus Pete Buttigieg in Iowa, and more on Indiana Week in Review for the week ending September 15, 2017.
Ice Miller is proud to support Indiana Week in Review. Ice Miller, with a 100-year tradition of learning what is important to clients and strategizing with them toward a common goal. Today, Ice Miller continues its commitment to help clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com.
This week, Indiana Democrat Joe Donnelly was one of just six U.S. senators invited to a White House dinner to discuss President Trump's tax reform agenda.
In a statement, Senator Donnelly called the dinner a good conversation and focused on his proposal to address outsourced jobs. Congressman Todd Rokita, one of the Republicans vying to oust Donnelly, blasted his presence at the dinner. Rokita's campaign continues to argue Donnelly merely pretends to be bipartisan. Congressman Luke Messer, another chief Donnelly opponent, says the Hoosier Democrat is playing politics and needs to support President Trump's tax plan. And Messer appeared to call Donnelly's outsourcing proposal a political pet project.
How much of a boost does Donnelly's presence at this bipartisan dinner give the Hoosier senior senator? It's the first question for our Indiana Week in Review panel. Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike O'Brien, Eric Berman, WIBC Statehouse reporter, and John Ketzenberger, president of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. I'm Indiana Public Broadcasting Statehouse reporter Brandon Smith. Ann Delaney, is President Trump helping solidify this narrative that Joe Donnelly's trying to build?
I think it's a recognition, and it's not the first recognition. The Lugar Institute said he was the most bipartisan Democrat in Congress, not just in the Senate, but in Congress. Joe's reputation has always been for working across the aisle, and you get those two backbenchers that are in the middle of their food fight trying to say who is more like Donald Trump.
I thought they weren't the elite.
Yeah, they're not the elite. Who's more like Donald Trump? The problem is Donald Trump has recognized the fact that they can't govern. Republicans have majorities in both houses, and they have the presidency, and they're incompetent. They cannot govern. And you get those 90 negative, what's his name? Nattering nabobs of negativism. All they can say is no, and that includes both Messer and Rokita. So if Donald Trump wants to get anything done, he's going to have to reach out to bipartisan Democrats. That's what he's doing. A recognition of Joe Donnelly's contribution in that regard is obvious. And I think it's smart on Donald Trump's part, because if he deals just with the Republicans, nothing will get accomplished.
I'm guessing you don't see this the same way Ann does.
I'm not looking too deep into it. I mean, I think when the president invites you to dinner, you go to dinner. You know, when Republicans were invited by President Obama, they went. The real key here is going to be, does Donnelly try to play it both ways? Does he go to the White House and be seen with Donald Trump, who I'm told is very unpopular right now, but apparently not so much, that you're not celebrating the fact that this bipartisanship is going to help Donnelly politically? But the real test is going to be, when do Democrats lock up a vote on tax reform, and what does Donnelly do in that situation? Does he, if a vote comes to the floor, does he vote for tax reform? I mean, those are really going to be the threshold questions. Senator Donnelly can go and give the great appearance of working with the president, who's popular in Indiana. But when the rubber hits the road with Senator Donnelly, that's oftentimes when he's not with you.
Well, it depends, doesn't it, on what tax reform is? I mean, if tax reform is designed to give 5,000 people, repeal the inheritance tax, so 5,000 people with over $11 million each don't have to pay anything, that's not tax reform. If it's real tax reform, Democrats are interested in that.
Do you think Messer and Rokita's campaigns are probably a little unhappy at the president at this point?
Probably a little bit, yeah. You're not just those campaigns, but whoever they find in North Dakota to run against Heidi Heitkamp, and whoever they I'm trying to remember the third Democrat, but it's another one that Mr.
Manchin in West Virginia.
That might be a tougher hill to climb. But Mitch McConnell's trying to get those two Senate seats and pad the majority a little bit, and they've got to be looking around. What are you doing? You're giving visibility. You're building the bipartisanship aura that Joe Donnelly has build himself as for 6 years, and even going back to his House career. So, yeah, this probably didn't sit very well on the other side.
To Mike's point, where the rubber meets the road is what Joe Donnelly and Heitkamp and everyone else will actually do when something gets to their floors. But in that sense, are you even more upset if you're Messer and Rokita, because this really could have just been for show, and it's a pretty good show if you're Joe Donnelly?
Well, it's a prime showing if you're Joe Donnelly, and you're shuttled off to the midnight showing of a really bad movie if you're Rokita or Messer. So I wouldn't blame them for being upset about this. And while I appreciate quoting Spiro Agnew and the nattering nabobs of negativity,
we're probably the only ones who remember that.
the point that you make, Ann, is that that this is going to somehow help Donnelly, and I think you have to. I would think about the messenger here, the person who orchestrated that, and this is the president, who has shown no compunction about leaving anyone out to dry. It seems like his only loyalty is to himself, which is fine, I suppose, if you're not trying to build a coalition or get something done. And so I think the first chance he gets, he'll cut Donnelly off the knees, too. So it's a little dangerous for Donnelly to take this to the bank.
Well, but he has to have Democrats to get anything done, because those 90 Republicans won't vote for anything.
We had
people from both Florida and Texas voting against hurricane relief. Okay? I mean, they won't do anything. And if he wants to do something, he's going to have to cultivate the Democrats.
I think he wants to get... He's the deal cutter, right? I mean, he's the ultimate deal guy. That's his brand,
That's his brand. I haven't seen evidence of it yet.
We're talking about the evidence.
Yeah,
what are
you
talking
about?
We haven't seen the results.
But he made a deal with the Democrats and not with the Republicans.
And we were talking about it this week with immigration reform, too. A similar coalition coming together of Democrats who are interested in border security and want a deal on DACA.
Yeah,
Business and political leaders in the Indianapolis area announced this week that the region will make a bid for Amazon's next headquarters.
Indianapolis Mayor Joe Hogsett made the announcement alongside Scott Fadness, mayor of Indy suburb Fishers. The bid to lure the Amazon headquarters to Indiana will be a region-wide effort that includes 9 counties. The tech giant wants to be able to develop as much as 8 million square feet in a North American city with a metro population of at least 1 million, a trained workforce, and myriad other amenities. Amazon wants to hire 50,000 people at the new HQ, including lots of software engineers. Analysts say Indiana is a long shot for securing the site, though Indy Mayor Hogsett says that's nothing new. The city has been hearing the same thing since the Pan Am Games in 1987.
Mike O'Brien, a new study this week found that Indianapolis is the number two city in the country for jobs. So why do so many people consider this Amazon bid a long shot?
Well, one, I think we have a lot going for us. We have, first and foremost, we have bipartisan regional cooperation here. 9 counties, Democrat mayor of Indianapolis, Joe Hogsett, Republican mayor Scott Fadness and Fishers. And that's going to mean something to any company that's looking to Indiana. We have in the Amazon bid, the Amazon officials said they're looking for states with stable political leadership. And we have that here. You know, we have a balanced budget, we have a surplus, we have a AAA credit rating, we have all of those things. One of the challenges we have right now is we have a lot of open jobs. We don't have a real pipeline of, if you're going to employ 50,000 people, you really have to be sure that you can go find them. We have great universities that are putting a lot of people to work. Sometimes they put them to work outside of Indiana and the higher end software development jobs and the things that Amazon wants to create here. So I think it's great that that we're making the effort, for sure. But we're in competition with the whole country.
Yeah. Does this sort of expose, though, what leadership has acknowledged is perhaps Indiana's biggest flaw at this point, which is we're struggling to figure out who's going to fill all these jobs that we keep attracting?
Well, that's part of the problem. The other part of the problem is that we're not by an ocean and we're not by mountains, okay? So what you have to offer in exchange is a great quality of life. Here, you know, it means tremendous investment in our educational system and in our higher educational system, which we're not seeing, and in the infrastructure, which we're not seeing. And when you put all of those things together, you want to make Indiana a place that's something more than a balanced budget and a surplus. You want to have a good quality of life here to make it competitive. And, you know, we've gotten a lot of low-paying Amazon jobs. That seems to be what's gravitated towards Indiana. It would be great if this bipartisan spirit could result in that kind of a windfall to the community, but I'm not all that optimistic.
Hendricks County is lovely this time of year, I should just say that.
Is this, Joe Hogs had talked about this, you know, is it a quixotic errand to go for this Amazon bid, or does it mean something even if it doesn't come through?
Well, if it is, then we've had a history of tilting at the windmills, and it's been good for the region. They built a dome without a team, and then there's a team. And that's really not an unparalleled example. I think a more relevant example here is in the mid-1980s, there were a lot of competition for Japanese-headquartered corporations who were investing in the United States. The call went out from Mitsubishi. They wanted to put a big auto plant in the Midwest, and so everybody was bidding on that, including Indiana. Indiana came up short and did not get that particular plant. But as a result of all of the effort that went into that, they were successful with the Subaru Isuzu plant, which is still in Lafayette, employing, I believe, about 4,000 people in well-paying jobs. So I think the exercise is important. We would definitely be a long shot. I agree completely with Ann's analysis. But that doesn't mean you shouldn't try it. And that doesn't mean you shouldn't go through the effort. And if it results in better infrastructure and better education and more focus on what we need to do economic development-wise, so much the better.
We've seen a lot of big companies, Boeing springs to mind, who started shopping around and got just a ton of money being offered up by a lot of states to move there. Is there a point at which, to you, particularly for as much attention as Amazon is getting, that it almost starts to become a little unattractive considering how much money you might have to give up to get it?
Well, there might be that point, but that's a decision that Joe Hogsett and Scott Fadness and I assume eventually Eric Holcomb are going to decide. What's our breakpoint? What's our offer? The Amazon RFP is pretty forthright. It says, tell us what incentives you're going to give us. And if the city decides that, you know, the city will make its best offer and Amazon will decide how that stacks up against the other ones. I think that's a question that kind of resolves itself.
Yeah. Well, time now for viewer feedback. Each week, we pose an unscientific online poll question in conjunction with our Ice Miller email and text alerts. This week's question, will the Indianapolis area win the bid to get Amazon's new headquarters? A, yes, B, no, or C, maybe if everyone in the area signs up for Amazon Prime. Last week's question, will Congress enact legislation to legalize or reform DACA within 6 months? 39% say it will legalize the current program, 27% say it will reform that program, and 34% say Congress won't pass a DACA bill. If you'd like to take part in the poll, go to wfyi.org/IWIR and look for the poll. Well, South Bend Mayor Pete Buttigieg was in Iowa this week, which is, of course, home to the first caucus of the presidential cycle.
Buttigieg spoke to an Iowa progressive political organization in Des Moines, and much of his speech focused on what he believes Democrats' message needs to be, which he says shouldn't be all about Donald Trump.
I believe our party's never going to recapture the faith and the imagination of American people if all we have to offer is a litany of this president's many, many sins.
Rather, Buttigieg says Democrats' message is that they, in his words, support and protect people going about their everyday lives.
So I'm starting a political project called Hitting Home. And we're going to try to move the center of gravity back to the kitchen table, to real lives that are actually shaped by policies, good and bad.
Eric Berman, what do you think of this Buttigieg message?
Well, apparently he's running for president. No, I doubt that he's launching a presidential campaign. I think he's right on point. I mean, John Kerry in 2004 and Mitt Romney in 2012 and other candidates through history have discovered to their regret that you can't just run against the other guy. You've got to show what you're for. I mean, candidates always have that out there, but if it's purely the other guy is evil and we've got to get him out, voters are going to say, and that's the message that Pete Buttigieg was selling when he ran for DNC chairman, and he's carrying that message forward again. He's right.
So this speech sounded an awful lot like a campaign speech, whether it's a presidential campaign or something else. But if not that, what is he running for?
Well, you could make a good argument, I think, based on what Eric was saying, that he's running for the soul of the Democrat Party in the sense that it's a marked contrast to that being demonstrated by Bernie Sanders and some of the others who are on the more progressive wing, and certainly in marked contrast to what the Republicans have been standing for in recent years. So I think he's looking for a populist position. He's certainly sounding a populist message, and I think he's saying, come along with me, because I think this is the future and this is where we should take the party, and I think that's really what he's running
for. He talked about launching an organization to kind of further this message. How effective can that sort of thing be from the mayor of South Bend?
Well, I mean, stranger things have happened in terms of candidates for national office. But I think Pete Buttigieg has a great record to talk about as well as the rhetoric. When you look at what's happening in South Bend, I mean, the Family and Medical Leave Act that he passed for city employees and the development he's doing downtown, he's really accomplishing a lot to move South Bend forward. And I think that perhaps even more than the rhetoric, demonstrates his ability to get things done. And that's, I think, what a lot of people are looking for. That's supposedly what they were looking for Donald Trump, except that with the Republicans in the Congress, he can't get anything done.
Just one last shot there before we get over to you.
Just in case you forgot.
Yeah. What do you think? I mean, how well can this Buttigieg message sell among Democratic Party voters?
I think it has to sell, because right now there are fewer and fewer Democratic Party voters. We're seeing in Indiana right now, there was a report this week, Democrats are having a hard time finding anybody to run for three statewide offices that are up next year. Nationally, over the course,
nobody wants. To
I know
run
you always have a
office.
Hard time finding candidates.
Well, it's because you have more voters.
We've seen this every 4 years.
Yeah.
At the national level, Democrats have really are on the decline. I mean, by every metric. I mean, they've lost majorities in Congress. They've lost the White House. They lost 30 state legislatures in the last 10 years. They lost 14 governorships. We have more Republican governors in this country right now than we've ever had. It's not unique to the Democratic Party to make sure that you're filling your pipeline with talented and developing leaders to go and run for these offices. That was a priority in Mitch Daniels' second term. When he won re-election, the priority was finding people to run for the state legislature, and we've been very successful in finding good people ever since then.
Well, you also were helped with redistricting,
we
which
won in
basically
gave you seats to which you were not entitled. We had 20-seat majority in the House on maps.
That's
that were
right,
by
because of your masterful maps, not because of so
they were
many
your
people.
Maps. They were drawn by Ed Mayberg.
The 2010 race was before the Republicans.
The 2010 was, but yeah, not anymore. Right. Not when you got to 70. That's your map.
Well, we also had a fundamental shift in how Indiana voters identify themselves.
Temporarily. We'll see how long that lasts.
Sure.
Controversy this week over questions posed to Notre Dame professor Amy Barrett during her confirmation hearing for a federal judgeship.
President Trump nominated Barrett a few months ago to serve on the Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals. At her confirmation hearing, some Democratic senators questioned whether the Notre Dame professor's Catholic faith would preclude her from fairly adjudicating cases before the panel. Catholic leaders, including Notre Dame President John Jenkins, decried those questions, and Congressman Luke Messer and Todd Rokita, both U.S. Senate candidates, said they amounted to anti-Catholic bigotry. Messer and Rokita pressed Democrat Joe Donnelly, the man they hoped to unseat, to denounce his colleague's remarks. Donnelly said he supports Barrett's nomination and that a person of faith can faithfully uphold the law.
John Katzenberger, were these questions out of line?
No, I don't think they were out of line, but I think her answer is right on the point. You know, it doesn't disqualify her faith, her religious faith, does not disqualify her from a position. It's important to remember some perspective here.
I don't care for that, John.
I know, so I'll give you some anyway. in 1960, there were worries that that if John Kennedy was elected president, that the Pope would be controlling the United States, and so there are always hysterical notions around these kinds of things. And it's the reactions to the questions that I think are really most interesting and revealing. Were those questions loaded? Quite possibly. I don't know what the motivations of the people who asked them were, but as questions, they're not out of line, nor was Amy Barrett's response to them.
What do you think of Joe Donnelly's response?
To be honest, I've not seen Joe Donnelly's response. I'm a little surprised that, for Todd Rokita and Luke Messer to come out and say, hey, you need to get out there and denounce this quickly. That's a chance to try and be a little bit opportunistic, say, hey, we've got something that makes the other guy potentially be exposed. We've got to jump on this while we can.
Donnelly's response, being a Notre Dame grad, a Catholic, was pretty much, no, I don't think it disqualifies you, and I wouldn't have asked these questions, and I support her nomination. Is that satisfactory to you?
I think the motivation behind the questions, and we'll see if there's a ruling that comes down and it fits in the liberal kind of anti-Christian box, they're going to see you're trying to practice religion from the bench. And that's typically the motivation behind these things. Joe Donnelly being a Catholic Notre Dame grad, I mean, that's a satisfactory answer, I guess.
It is not anti-Catholic.
I mean, it's the motivation behind it is.
That was on the part of Rokita and Messer was political, period. It's not anti-Catholic. The thing that concerns me the most about her is that she doesn't believe in precedent. Okay, and if she doesn't believe in precedent, what do you follow? I mean, that's the backbone of our jurisprudence system here. The other thing that concerns me is she would be occupying an Indiana seat on the Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals. She is not licensed to practice in Indiana. And in the years that she's lived here, she hasn't bothered to get that license. And it wouldn't be unreasonable to expect an appellate court judge in the federal Seventh Circuit to have trial experience and appellate experience. She virtually has neither. She's an academic picked by the Federalist Society and the right wing of Donald Trump to occupy an ideological position on the Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals, and I think she should be disqualified.
So, with those concerns in mind, is it actually folly by the folks who were asking these sort of questions that could be perceived as anti-Catholic? Because then now all of the attention is on that, and we're not talking about perhaps more substantive issues one way or the other.
Well, I think Anne raises very clear and important questions and fair questions about her appointment. I think they're more pertinent than her religious views. And I think that your point is well made, that it probably detracts from a more, you know, in wrestling, Mike McDaniel used to say, you know, take your best hold. This is not a very good hold. A better hold would be the arguments that Anne was making.
All right. Well, President Trump is reportedly working with congressional Democrats this week on DACA, immigration reform, and border security.
Democratic leaders emerged from a White House meeting Wednesday declaring they were close to a deal with the Republican president that would ensure DACA recipients are shielded from deportation. That deal would also allegedly come with increased border security measures that don't, for now, include President Trump's proposed border wall with Mexico. Trump confirmed that he's close to a deal with congressional Democrats on the issue, tweeting Thursday that DACA recipients were brought to this country through no fault of their own and that no one should want to see them deported. Far-right conservative media is already labeling the president Amnesty Don, and Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell released a statement saying he looked forward to reviewing the president's immigration proposal.
And Eleni, what are we to make of this burst of bipartisanship from Donald Trump?
Well, it's the same thing I said before. He realizes that he needs the Democrats to get anything done. I mean, the Senate passed a bill Joe Donnelly voted for in 2013 that would have resolved this issue. It couldn't get past the Republicans in the House. So I think Donald Trump is actually, if he ever is going to make any deals on anything of any substance or importance to this country, he's going to need Democratic help. And I know Democrats are prepared to give it. We're not prepared to build a wall, but we are prepared to resolve the fate of almost a million young people who were brought here through no fault of their own and need not only the certainty that they can stay, but a path to citizenship. It's only right. And this is the only country they've known.
Todd Rokita and Luke Messer, to put an Indiana sort of frame on this, have spent, particularly Todd Rokita, have spent a lot of time evoking the names of Chuck Schumer and Nancy Pelosi to demonize Joe Donnelly. Is it undercut that message when President Trump is making deals with Chuck Schumer and Nancy Pelosi?
Well, I think it depends on the issue. I think on this issue, I think deporting these dreamers under DACA is an unpopular position nationally. It's a minority opinion in the Republican Party. So I think in Congress, I mean, there is a block. There are a large block of Republicans that do want DACA repealed permanently, and these people deported. I do think that's a minority opinion in the party. I think there is a coalition to be built, and we're building that wall, believe me.
And Mexico's paying for it, right? Right,
yeah,
right after
Mexico's
the earthquake? Yeah.
Eventually.
That's a lot. Maybe they'll use the debris from the earthquake to construct the wall. How about that?
See, now you're thinking. You're coming up with bipartisan solutions to build the wall.
Similarly to the discussion we had earlier about Donnelly having dinner at the White House, but does this continue to undercut this message that Rokita and Messer are trying to build?
Well, it does, yeah. I mean, but it's going to be a national phenomenon that's going to keep playing out and twisting and turning over the next 14 months. You know, next week he might be back on the Republican side. What's interesting about this, there's two things that are interesting about this, I think. One is you don't have the deal maker making a deal, bringing both sides to the table. We've gone from making deals with Republicans, with Democrats shut out of the room, to two consecutive issues where a deal is made with the two minority leaders, with Republicans looking in from the outside. So the day that there's a deal where everybody is at the news conference in the Rose Garden, that's when we're really going to see something that's fundamentally changed. The other thing is, what happened in 6 months of debate over health care? The criticism from Republicans was, he's not getting involved in the issue. He just fires off tweets and says, pass something, and never says what we're supposed to pass. On DACA, and to a lesser but evolving extent on tax reform, you're actually seeing the White House actually try to wade in a little bit on the substance, and that's different from what we've seen before.
It's impossible to predict what Eric just pointed out. It's impossible to predict what Donald Trump will do, but should we see this as a sort of signal that he is frustrated and finding himself finding it difficult to deal with Republicans on the Hill, so he's looking elsewhere? Do we think this might continue for at least for a while?
You know, his presidency to this point has been sort of like a whirling dervish. And to the extent that it might be slowing down a little bit, and if we do get to a point that Eric was talking about where you get, you know, both sides at a table and they start talking substance, then we'll really have seen something that's been achieved. You know, the Democrats don't have a lot of impetus to do this after for 8 years being shut down by the Republicans. So if Donald Trump can somehow make Democrats come to the table and Republicans come with him, holy smokes, that's news.
Maybe he'll even start campaigning for Democratic candidates.
That would probably be damaging to Democratic candidates.
It probably might. Not in the primary. Maybe.
Boy, that's
going to
put you in an awkward spot.
No one. Even blind hogs can find acorns once in a while.
Well, that's Indiana Week in Review for this week. Our panel is Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike O'Brien, Eric Berman of WIBC, and John Katzenberger of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. If you'd like a podcast of this program, you can find it at wfyi.org/IWIR, or starting Monday, you can stream it or get it on demand from Xfinity. I'm Brandon Smith of Indiana Public Broadcasting. Join us next time, because a lot can happen in an Indiana week.
Ice Miller is proud to support Indiana Week in Review. Ice Miller, with a 100-year tradition of learning what is important to clients and strategizing with them toward a common goal. Today, Ice Miller continues its commitment to help clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com.